Our reading of the Holy Scriptures this morning is taken from the book of Mark, chapter 5, beginning at verse 21 and going to the end of the chapter. Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, and she will be healed, and she will live." So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years, and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment, for she said, "If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well." Immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." While he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not be afraid, only believe." And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Then he took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know it, and said that something should be given her to eat. The Gospel of our Lord.
Thank you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Two weeks ago, I gave you a 53-minute sermon. It was the longest I think I have ever preached. You can consider this to be something of a catch-up to that. I am suffering from a sore throat, and I don't think I could get through a 40-minute sermon. So my commenting will be my sermon today. The commenting is upon our gospel passage, and we have been working our way through the Gospel of Mark. Jesus himself, beginning with his trip across the lake, has declared war. He has been fighting with the religious powers that be, but he has decided they're nothing. They're small fry. They're junior league. He's going to declare war on all those things that honestly mankind is truly enslaved to and devoured by. He is going to declare war on nature. He is going to declare war on the demonic forces. He is going to declare war on sickness and death, and ultimately on cynicism and unbelief. We have gotten to the part where he confronts sickness, and death. These five things no power of human ability can really affect. We cannot change the weather. We cannot stop the spiritual forces around us from doing what they wish. We have no power of our own over sickness or death, and we have no power over unbelief. But Christ, in order, one by one, takes them on. And he defeats them one by one. And Mark makes a point of telling us that this is done in chronological order. It is not put together simply systematically, so that Mark says, okay, now Jesus has conquered this and conquered that. Christ himself fights these battles chronologically. He fights nature on the water. He fights demons on the other side. He comes back across, and that's when he encounters sickness and death. Jesus the Lord is going out of his way to show us he is the conquering king. And that is very, very much a part of the gospel. When we preach the gospel, when we use that phrase, we think in terms of sharing Christ's priestly ministry, of his dying on the cross for men's sins and redeeming them, and that is part of the gospel. But all of the gospel is all of Christ. It is all of his ordination. And he is not just ordained priest. He is also ordained prophet, and he is ordained king. And in this section of the gospel, we cannot but escape the image of his kingliness. He is conquering. And that is Mark's main point. But as I look at these two interconnected events, there is a secondary point I would like to bring out. By the way, many have asked, why does Mark interpose these stories? As if Mark had some artistic reason for doing so. The answer is that Mark did not. Again, he is going out of his way to show us event by event, at least in this section of the gospel, things that happen sequentially. And believe it or not, life is kind of messy. You set off to do one thing, and by providence, another thing gets in the way. Jesus the Christ experienced all of human experience. That includes Jesus' experience, life being very messy. So he is on his way to heal a sick child, and he encounters a sick woman. But here in these two connected events, Christ is not only showing us his great victory over these great powers, he is also showing us his great victory over our deepest fears. The two guest stars, if you will, in this gospel passage, the sick woman and Jairus, the man seeking healing for his daughter, Mark goes out of his way to show us they are afraid. And they have every reason to be afraid. It is only wishful thinking to think that human beings have the power to defeat sickness and death. I remember being in a Christian bookstore years ago when a woman came in and began to talk with the owner of that bookstore. She was walking past the Get Well cards and gave them a disdainful look because when she prayed for people, they always got well. Always. She wasn't going to buy any Get Well cards because she knew that God had given her the power to defeat sickness. I find that rather hard to believe, given that every doctor has a 100% record of losing their patients. Do you realize that? If you go into medicine, you are guaranteed to lose 100% of your patients. Sickness and death are powerful. They're frightful people. She is afraid. She is afraid not only of her disease, which sets her apart socially from people, she is afraid of exposure. She is afraid of showing her weakness. And who can blame her? In this world, in this dog-eat-dog world, who wants to show any weakness? But Christ delivers her not only from her sickness, but from her fear of exposure. Jesus demands of her that she come forward and confess what has happened as a grace to her. She has to overcome her fear. She has to overcome her fear of admitting weakness, because that is part of owning Jesus as King. When Christ is your King, He is your defense. He is your sword that protects you, the shield you stand behind. She has to admit her weakness so that she can own His strength. And Christ delivers her from that fear. Christ delivers them from the fear of sickness and death. It is strange to me how every time I have ever read an account of people who have clinically died, one of the things that is always emphasized in the article is they say, well, now I'm not that afraid of death anymore because they've experienced it. They've encountered what's on the other side of it. Jesus is actually what's on the other side of death. He is Lord of death, and He is the giver of life. And both of these people have encountered Christ, and they are going to walk away from here no longer as afraid of sickness and death as they were. And just as they had good reason to be afraid, now they have good reason not to be. I really don't know what I would do if I were like a professor I had years ago in seminary who took all of Christianity and basically made it a philosophy. Christianity was a series of ideas, it was a philosophy, but it really didn't touch the world for him. And I remember in class, he was teaching at that level at one point. He was talking about very high and ethereal things, very philosophical things. And I asked him a question about death. I said, how does what you believe give you any comfort in the face of absolute and guaranteed coming death? And he said, death, that's what spurs on the religious activity, death as an idea. And I said, you know, I don't really want to deal with death as an idea because I'm not going to die as an idea. I don't exist as an idea. I exist in reality, and I'm really going to die, and I honestly have a problem with that. I would really like some true comfort, some deliverance from this enemy of mine. Where can I find that in your ideas? And the answer is, of course, I couldn't. Christianity actually touches the real world. If Jesus Christ isn't Lord over nature and demons and sickness and death and the power of belief, there's no point in assembling here this morning. If He is not real, if He is not present, if His power is not there to deliver, this is pointless. But these two individuals no longer need to fear sickness and death because they have met a real person who really is Lord over them and able to defeat them. And then finally, I think most significant for me, Jesus delivers from the fear of time. It would be very easy to preach this passage and preach it like a story where the clock is ticking and Jairus' daughter is going to die, and will Jesus get there in time? If I were a movie maker, that's how I'd do it. I build up the tension. Is Christ going to get there in time? And suddenly He is interrupted by a woman who has a problem. And horror of horrors, the clock plays out, and Christ doesn't get there, and the girl dies. Mark shows us that Christ is able to heal even after death. For you and I, death is kind of the ultimate reality. Once death has set in, there's no arguing with death. It is the final enemy to die, in fact, says 1 Corinthians. But Jesus shows his absolute divinity in that he is not subject to that. Anyone else would be under the clock without doubt. Because time and death, they are absolute for anyone else. The clock matters not at all to Christ. He is able to do his will, his way, when he wants to do it, regardless of whether this girl is dead or not, because that means nothing to him. He is the Lord of all things. We pray to the God who is the Lord of all things. The Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians writes about a time in his life where he says, you know, I was under such pressure, I didn't think I was going to survive. But nonetheless, we trusted in the Lord who is, quote, able to raise the dead, end quote. Now, I don't think that Paul was necessarily saying he expected to be like this little girl and be killed and then raised. But what he was saying was that God is not subject to time. The clock is not ticking on him. Whatever God had given Paul to accomplish, it was going to be accomplished, whether he died or not, because God was Lord over time. Death itself cannot stop the intent and purpose of God. This is the greatest victory in this cycle of battles we will see. We are finite creatures. Jesus from Nazareth, the carpenter's son, isn't. He is God in the flesh. Thanks be to God.